On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're on the overnight from Glasgow in Night Sleeper on BBC One, hopping on a school bus with horny educators in The Teacher Season 2 on Channel 5, and stepping inside a French fashion house in La Maison on Apple TV Plus. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is just about back on track this week after I returned from my trip to Florida with a very specific gift for Kay to mark her leaving from Heat Magazine. I refer, of course, to a particularly nasty strain of COVID-19. You're very, very welcome. This, of course, did mean, Kay, that I did miss your leaving debauchery, which was last night. Yeah. How did it go? Was it good?
It was so good. James, I missed you. I'm not even joking. I really wish you could have come, but you know, you were convalescing, I know. But it was honestly, I described it at the time as a sort of like, and it sounds depressing, but as a living wake, because how wow. rare it is. No, but you're in a room full of people you love and, you know. And
wish you were dead? I'm confused.
Yeah, who wish me dead. No, who were saying really lovely things about you. You never get to hear this kind of stuff, right? So it was just the most extraordinary thing. And so much time and effort went into it. So I've got to say, like, Steph of Basic Binges fame, Steph Celan, Boydo, and Lucy Cave just went above and beyond to deliver the most epic leaving do ever, and it was amazing.
Oh, I'm sad. I'm sad. Yeah. I missed it while I was sniffling and crawling around on the floor.
Well, if you will be lazy,
why were you crawling around on the floor?
Well, for effect. I mean there's no other reason. I probably dropped something.
That's how he's dealing, processing me leaving here.
That is how I'm dealing with the lack of K. I mean, I say
thrashing around the
lack of K. It simply means that, you know, I see you exactly the same amount as I saw you before. I'm just less likely to run into you in the kitchen. That's really the only difference.
I thought if I, you know, left completely, you'd be pining.
I think I'm seeing her more often because she's FaceTiming me on a constant basis.
Oh, my, right. Listen, if you want to go there, right, the last words Boyd said to me when I left to go to the tube after leaving Heat Magazine was, you know, you can call me during the day like this. He's never in his life said that to me. He hates me calling. And suddenly, now I'm FaceTiming and suddenly he's crying wolf. Yeah. We know who
it's just calls. It's just funny to go from, it's mainly amuses me that we've gone from Teams, like calls on Teams, to calls on FaceTime. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, there's something inherently funny about it. Only for me.
Boyce gave a brilliant speech, which was unexpected. I didn't think he would talk, do a speech. He gave such a wonderful speech that if anything was going to crack me, and I'm a fugly crier, Boydo nearly did
it. We should say that Boyd is currently wearing a t-shirt with your face on it. So, for those of you, and this is an audio medium, you can't see it, but this is a thing.
Yeah, I'm never taking it off.
Except when you're going to wear the one with four of my face on it, correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
The tonal shifts.
I alternate between the James tonal shifts and Kay's heat legend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never knowingly not promoting his and loving his podcast co-host.
Yeah, of course. I approve thoroughly. But we should segue now into what we have, in fact, been watching. Obviously, you guys held down the fort on Pilot Plus without me. You dot nettled it. I have yet to listen to that one. Hands up. What's that, Kay?
How proud were you that we managed to drive the desk? We recorded ourselves.
Yeah, this was. I did feel like a very proud parent. So me, from my deathbed, was FaceTimed in while Kay tried to work out what the various levers, sliders, and buttons in the studio did. And nothing blew up, no fires were started, and the office is still standing. So actually,
I compared it to an airplane, you know, when the pilot of the plane talked down how to land the plane. But I got it wrong. Someone's corrected me already on Twitter. This is how on it our listeners are. Boy, the pedant in me feels obliged to point out that Ted Stryker was talked down by Robert Stack rather than Lloyd Bridges, who was famously sniffing glue at the time. So yeah, Lloyd Bridges was there, but he was just sniffing glue. And Robert Stack is the one who actually advised the people how to bring the plane down. Yes.
Okay. So you are good correction.
You are the Robert Stack of the situation as well.
You sound quite hoarse this morning, Boydo. Was there karaoke last night? What happened?
No, I am hoarse. Yeah, I drank. Yeah, I think it's just the alcohol.
He was quaffing champagne. He was doing speeches. He was, you know, everyone wanted to talk to him because the main question that anyone wanted to talk to me about my leaving do was, how's Boyd?
How is he coping?
Boyd? Quite right.
So he's done a lot of talking.
Yeah, so okay. I'm a bit hoarse today, which is good when I've got two podcasts to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's always helpful. Yeah. I'm going to kick off by telling you what I've been watching this week. Mm-hmm. So obviously, when you're ill, you want to watch something that kind of works in that headspace, right? You want something sort of comforting. You want something sort of soothing. Now, I didn't do what you, I'm sure, imagine I did, which is back-to-back mainline The West Wing and Friends. That's not actually what I did. In fact, weirdly, I was on the plane. This was going out to Florida. And I read a news story about how Skies, A Discovery of Witches has got a new lease of life because it's turned up on Netflix in the US. And so loads of people have discovered this witchy, vampire-y, demon-y fantasy series through Netflix. And it's got this new... And I was like, oh, yeah. I really enjoyed the first season of that, which, lest we forget, we reviewed on the very, very first number one episode of the Pilot TV podcast. We reviewed The Discovery of Witches. The second season of that, when they go back in time, I liked significantly less, and I never watched the third and final series of this show, which is, of course, based on the Deborah Harkness urban fantasy novels. So I was like, do you know what? I'm going to give it a go. So I watched an episode. I was like, oh, okay, fine. You know, yeah, okay. Is it good? Is it? Fine. So, and then I started. I thought, oh, I'm done. I'm not actually going to watch the rest of this. But then I was struck with COVID. I felt so, so, so ill. I can't even tell you. And I needed something that was quite, you know, low commitment, low investment, didn't require a lot of brain power. I could kind of wash over me and felt kind of like a warm hug. And for me, that warm hug is witches and werewolves and vampires and stuff. So I watched the entire third season of A Discovery of Witches, pretty much back to back. It's like eight, maybe, something like that.
Okay.
Like an hour each, nearly. Like I watched the whole of the final season of A Discovery of Witches. And honestly, after finishing Interview with the Vampire, I kind of wanted more of that kind of vampiness. I was actually quite, and I still can't 100% tell you it's great, but I had a hell of a time. I really enjoyed myself.
Was it a balm to your soul?
It was. It was very much a balm to my soul. Matthew Good on full vampire form. Of course, he was a vampire in something else recently. I won't say what, because it's a bit of a spoiler. But it's nice to see him as Matthew de Clermont, the vampire in there. It's daft. But I had a good time with it. And actually, then I saw another thing about another show that's having a bit of research, and that is starring Sheriff Boyd, your namesake, Boydie. Harold Perrineau. It's From. You remember From? The kind of Stephen Kingian horror series. Well, Stephen King himself tweeted about From this week, saying how much he liked it. And so everyone's going, oh yeah, From's brilliant. It's one of the best things on TV. I was like, is it? Because I believe the third season has either been out or is about to come out. I can't remember, but I know there have been two, and there is a third season either coming or done. And I only ever watched the first one. So now I'm feeling like I really need to go back and watch the second one in preparation for the third one. Because if Stephen King recommends it, then, you know, I'm back on board.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I remember quite liking it, yeah, From.
Yeah, it was good.
Weird, wasn't it? Yeah.
It had, the thing is, and no spoilers, but the first season ended in such a way that implied to my cynical mind that they didn't know where it was going. And I thought this has all the hallmarks of a show that's going to unwind catastrophically in season two. But apparently that's not what happened. So, okay, great, brilliant. So now maybe I should dive back in.
Yeah. Is it all on sorry.
So you sound interested.
Yeah.
says Boydie, interesting as he clearly does something else on his computer.
Oh, do you know what? I was looking something up. You know, there's the other show, that really weird show about death, which is like one word. Was it actually called death? Do you know what I'm talking about? It was like a really out there procedural with, oh God, it's really annoying me. Anyway, I'll find out one.
Well, roughly, it's not the afterlife, because we've had a number of afterlifey ones.
Yeah, no. Oh, I can't remember. I think it ended this week in America, and it became this like cult phenomenon, but I can't remember what it's called.
Evil, do you?
Evil! Evil! Yeah.
That's not about death, to the best of my knowledge. Yes, so we reviewed Evil, because Stephen King also said in the same tweet, he was banging on about From, he also gave some love to Evil, which, and I do not love, as you know, those very episodic procedural shows, but this is a supernatural procedural, so maybe I could make time for it. People love it. They love Evil.
Yes,
and we did enjoy it. We did enjoy it.
But it's gone on to four seasons and 50 episodes. That's why, but thank you for remembering the title. Yeah, not called Death at All, Evil. But there's a lot of death in it, to be fair.
I'm sure lots of people die, yes.
But I saw, I think it was the season finale at this last week in America, and I saw loads of like top critics and Americans saying, oh, you know how brilliant it was. And it was a massive like cult phenomenon. It was on CBS. I think it's on Paramount Plus here, I think. But I might go back and check that out.
Yes, I'm tempted to as well. Stephen King's endorsement means a lot to me, so.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Right, Boydie, what non-death/evil things have you been watching?
Do you know what? I thought I've gone back to a show we reviewed last week or the week before, And I was quite scathing about it. And I thought, and I read all these
other reviews. Which one of the many shows he slagged off?
Steady. Well, can you guess? So, and I've done a semi-reverse ferret on it. I've watched three or four more episodes.
Give us a clue.
It can't be Chaos. It can't be Chaos.
Yes, it will be Chaos, actually.
Oh,
because
my God.
I think, as you recall, I was in favour of it. You two went, like, hard on it. And then I think a lot of good reviews have come out, and I think you're beginning to see the error of your ways.
I'm really not.
Well, I how many episodes did you watch, James?
I watched one, and I will never watch another.
Yeah, well, I have diligently gone back and watched three or four more. It is indeed Chaos, yes. I've done a semi-reverse ferret because I think I was probably slightly too harsh on it, about it. And I quite enjoy it. I'm quite enjoying it. But it definitely got 5 stars in The Guardian, and the review called it a masterpiece.
Madness.
And in fact, I tell you what was funny was this morning, Jeff Goldblum was on Lorraine on ITV, along with Lucy Cave, in fact. Live, yes, Live K. After all her efforts last night, Lucy Cave still managed to have a live showbiz slot on Lorraine. But Jeff Goldblum was there. Yeah, Jeff Goldblum was there in the studio talking about bigging it up, saying it got 5 stars in The Guardian, and they called it a masterpiece. And I thought, I've already watched some more episodes of it. And I still maintain that I find it quite an awkward watch. And one of the things, that, like The Guardian review, I'll stop banging on about The Guardian review eventually, but it calls it effortless. And I think the thing that I find about it that is kind of grating with me, I find it quite effortful, in fact. So even though there's lots to enjoy about it, more to enjoy about it than I initially gave credit for, and obviously watching Goldblum particularly doing anything is intrinsically entertaining, and you know, he gets to do all kinds of horrible, nasty things. A lot of it is entertaining, but it's still quite, I still don't love it. I kind of like it more than I did, but I don't love it. And I think it's like, you know, there's so much going on that it gets a bit weighed down by a lot of kind of stuff, too much stuff happening at the same time. But there is a lot to enjoy. And it's really, like, I think if you know about the myths, the Greek gods and all of that, it really helps, because I don't particularly, I've never taken much of an interest in it. People are like, oh, the creator has written it and used those myths to kind of explore ideas and update the characters, etc. It's really clever. You can tell how clever it is. But yeah, I don't think in the end it is quite for me, even though I've tried.
So less of a reverse ferret than just a ferret.
Yeah.
A bit of a ferret, yeah.
Or sideway ferret. Side sachet.
The ferret seems to be going in broadly the same direction it was going in last time.
I felt, let me re-emphasize, I found more to enjoy. I didn't hate it at all. I knew, like, as opposed to you, who could never bring himself to watch another episode, I would happily watch it to the end, and I may well indeed watch it to the end. Have you watched it to the end, Kay?
No, I haven't.
Okay. That surprised me, Kay, because you were such a stalwart defender of this show and clearly committed to it.
James, we were all reviewing it on the first episode, which I diligently watched, and I didn't hate it as much as you because you couldn't open your mind to it. So,
that's
yes.
True. I still very, very clearly remember you saying you were going to watch the rest of them. I don't know what happened.
I've been watching other stuff, mainly for the podcast that you didn't turn up for. So, yeah.
Oh, she's going to be where I live.
Yeah. Yeah. With your, inverted commas, COVID.
My COVID. I would finish by saying this is, and this is going to sound like I'm completely just ferreting rather than reverse ferreting, but Jeff Goldblum, I've watched quite a few interviews that he's done in this round of publicity. And in fact, he was on the Empire podcast, but it's fine because that was a live event, wasn't it? Part of the Empire.
So we did a VIP event.
So if you're wondering, listeners, why the interview with Jeff Goldblum wasn't on the TV-based podcast, because he's promoting a TV show and not a film, but it was on the Empire podcast. It's all legit. It's fine. That was done. But he is such a model professional in interviews and media. He's so funny. He was like brilliant on Lorraine this morning. He was so engaging and charming and witty and all of that. It's like, I'd rather watch him do anything, you know. I will happily watch him do anything. And I'm not sure him being in Chaos is any particularly more entertaining or well, you know, or kind of eloquent or interesting than all the publicity he's done, is what I'm saying.
Well, this is kind of what we were saying, that it wasn't that it was well written, it just had Jeff Goldblum in it, and his Jeff Goldbluminess kind of transcends any material put in front of him. So.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
No, it's chaos trying to figure out which way you're falling on this.
I know. I'm reflecting the complexity of things as they should.
Sure you are.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what I've been watching then. I have. So, Colin from accounts.
Yes.
Now, as you recall, we all really enjoyed the first episode, but there was something in me that was just like, I was holding back a little bit because you know how obsessed I was with the first series. We all were, right? Something just like, I found it very funny. It ticked all the boxes, but there's still something. I got to episode 4, right? I'm about to start episode 6. So 4 and 5 just completely like, again, reignited my passion for it because it was that episode with the porn. I can't remember what they called it, like moral porn or whatever. And then also where Ashley goes missing. The first episode, episode 4, which I've just found so like brilliant, was written by Harriet. And then the next one by Patrick. Those two episodes are just everything I love about Colin from accounts in 2 eps. So yeah, I'm back on it. I'm sort of rationing. I want to slow it down a bit, but I will finish by the end of the weekend and I'll report back. But absolutely loving it. Everyone get on it.
There we go. She's returned to the fold.
Yes, like, my Colin
love. You were cooler on season 2 of Colin.
I was still a favourable review, but I was holding back.
I did watch the episode with the vet and the snake. that was really funny. I thought, why is the snake out of the cage?
Yeah,
that was brilliant.
Second thing, I'm caught up. So we're recording this on a Friday. I'm caught up with Sherwood and just, Sherlock, I should say.
Sherlock.
And,
Get it right. Sherlock.
And God, it's just stupid thing to say almost because we don't need to, but it's fucking brilliant and can't get enough of that either.
Well, I haven't watched it and it's Boyd's fault. Because he told me that the second episode would be traumatic, and so I have pointedly not watched it.
No.
So I'm like, no, I'm out. Sorry.
James, do you know what? I mean, we have the same disposition, I think, with that kind of stuff. And I was also nervous because obviously Boyd issued that warning, but I could handle it. You need to watch it. It's really done. It's a short amount, right? It's just a quick, sharp, boom, something happens, and then you're like, you're reading from it. But it's not like, it's not protracted, hard stuff to watch, I don't think.
And it's also not the kind of thing you specifically, James, I didn't warn you again. It's intensity. It's the intensity of it that's amazing. It doesn't touch upon the things. It's just violence. You deal with violence all the time.
General violence, non-specific violence.
You've watched other things that are harder to watch.
Actually quite interesting when we talk about obviously specific triggering issues with the group, because for me, I have a thing about power imbalances, torture, sexual assault in particular, things like that. And shows there was an interview recently with James Masters, obviously played Spike on Buffy. We've talked about this on this show quite a bit, that there's an episode in season 6 of Buffy, a really ill-advised episode in season 6 of Buffy, where Spike tries to rape Buffy and Buffy fights him off. James, did you not know this? No, so this is, it's a famously ill-conceived episode of Buffy. And James Masters did an interview about it, which I read recently. I'd never read it before. I think it's a new interview. And he was talking about how filming that episode sent him into therapy, because funnily enough, he has a similar thing to me where he can't watch that kind of stuff in films, TV shows, whatever it is. He just won't watch it. And he said he's always had a thing about it. And then to then be asked to act it out. And he said, as an actor, he is always hard passed on anything that has that kind of content in it, but obviously he was under contract for Buffy and he literally couldn't say no, and he argued against it and he fought against it and he was really unhappy with it, and they made him do it anyway. And he said he found the whole experience incredibly traumatic and it really upset him and it sent him into therapy. It's a horrible scene. It's really, really unpleasant.
Actors in general, do they get, I feel like there should be a service they're offered, you know, counts like for people, for example, who are playing serial killers or like doing really awful things, like is there any kind of like pastoral care from the production side of things, or do they just have, you know, just by have therapists
I imagine is what they say. But you know, I guess it depends a lot on how the actor approaches their roles, because there are many different ways of approaching acting.
Method.
Like if you're a method actor, or if you're someone who really embraces those roles and takes them home with you. And I'm always really interested to talk to actors about this, about how much they take their roles home with them, whether they can shrug them off at the end of the day. If you're a Daniel Day-Lewis, then you become that character, you live that character. You know, Jared Leto does similar things, but Josh Molina, famously from The West Wing, is incredibly upfront about the fact that he's an actor. He pretends to be other people and he just doesn't in any way try and tap into that character. He's just like, yeah, you tell me what I'm supposed to do and I'll read the lines, I do the thing. Like there is almost no emotional connection between him and the characters he plays at all.
I feel like if we three were actors, I think James and I would very much take it home with us and be like in balls, fetal position. I have the feeling that Boyd would be a cool, calm character who play a psychopath and then literally within 30 seconds of finishing would be off to Arsenal.
Shrug it off. Yeah.
Remember what Larry Olivier famously told Dustin Hoffman was being all method when they filmed yes. Marathon Man and Larry Olivier? Just act, dear boy.
Yes, I'm very right acting, dear boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I totally get it. I think Kay's right. I think if I acted, I would very much have to go to that headspace and try and become that character. And I think it must be quite traumatic if you're playing a really dark role. Like, it must be difficult not to take some of that stuff home.
I think it's time for you to go back and do more acting, James, since your debut in, what was the show?
Bonjour La Classe.
Bonjour La Classe.
I mean, I didn't want to say it, but you know, sometimes that character still haunts me.
Yeah.
My character from Bonjour La Classe, you know, well, I've never been able to.
Maybe in La Maison season 2 with the French element to it. Yeah.
But perhaps. The bottom line is, what we're saying is, you need to watch episode 2 of Sherwood.
That list of things you said, your trigger warning, it's not any of those. It's just the intensity of it, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so maybe. I have the latest episode of Rings of Power to watch, so, you know, there's a hierarchy.
Of course you have, yes.
All right, super. Well, I guess that is what we've been watching. Time now for this week's listener question. What do you have for us, Kay?
Okay, so this question is from Marek, who says, I'm doing a rewatch of Game of Thrones and forgot how much I love the unlikely relationship between... Oh, no. These names. I can't say it.
Oh, go on. This will be entertaining.
Darren, leave all this in because it's gold.
No.
Yeah.
Gold,
no.
I tell you.
They're just character names. You can't
yeah, go on.
Tywin.
No.
Okay, Tywin.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
All right.
And Aura.
Aura.
Yeah. Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, this is brilliant. I'm enjoying this a lot.
This is good. This could be a new slot on the show.
It really
Kay tries
be.
To say names.
Kay, yeah. Kay says say, names.
Kay reads out fantasy names.
Kay tries to read names while getting also furious about people saying her name wrong. Okay,
yeah, that is true.
Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is, the best part of this is it amuses me and Boydie no end. But I guess we have referenced it before. But most of our listeners are oblivious to your pronunciation woes because we almost always remove it in post production and cut it all out.
Yes,
for the fear of being
cancelled. Okay. So anyway, the unlikely relationship between those two characters in season 2.
So Arya and Tyrion Lannister. Yes.
Fine. And wondered how many other great odd couple friendships in TV shows you can think of. Another one that came to mind was Rebecca and Keeley in Ted Lasso. Oh, also, just as a PS, while you're thinking of your answer, he says some nice stuff about us. And then he said, I feel a certain responsibility for making you the foreign language correspondent, as it was my suggestion to review more foreign language TV shows for my French girlfriend that kicked it all off. And by the way, I actually think Boyd has reviewed more of them since then than you.
Of course.
Which went back and forth a few times, and I obviously laid the blame squarely at his door, and we both agreed that actually he doesn't have the time to watch the French shows these days, so it doesn't matter if I'm the foreign correspondent. So I've officially resigned, is what I'm saying.
Right,
yes.
Okay, good to know.
Wow.
That is, to be fair, the odd couple pairing that he picks there, Arya and Tywin, is actually a really nice one. So there's a weird sequence in the book. It's not quite a friendship because she fucking hates him and wants him to die, but there is a strange... sort of like he quite likes talking to her, although he calls her boy the whole time, thinks she's a boy. It's when they're at Harrenhal. That's quite a good one. I also, another Arya one, Arya and the Hound. That's a really interesting kind of odd couple friendship that they have. And when they reunite in the final season, that's a lovely sequence. So yeah, no, I quite like things like that. When you get characters who you just absolutely shouldn't get along, but they have a weird kind of chemistry/bond thing. It's interesting.
I would say odd couple. Well, it's couple, but odd thruple friendships. Us three. I mean, anyone from the outside probably is like, "How are they friends?
Are they friends?"
No, I thought Jackson Lamb and Standlish in Slow Horses.
Yeah, they have a weird dynamic, don't they? Because obviously, the big secret is that he obviously has a secret that ultimately tests their friendship quite severely, doesn't it? So I'm not saying what it is because I don't want to give out spoilers for people who haven't seen Slow Horses, but I like their friendship. I think it's quite sweet. It reminds me a little bit of the Josh and Donna dynamic.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I'm going to say it this week because we're going to get onto it a bit later because it's coming to, is it Channel 5? All the seasons of Fringe are coming to Channel 5?
No, ITVX.
ITVX, right. All the seasons of Fringe are coming to ITVX, and the friendship there between Joshua Jackson, I mean, it's kind of a friendship slash, you know, will they, won't they type thing with Joshua Jackson and Anna Torv. So it's Peter Bishop and Olivia Dunham. Again, it's similar to the kind of Mulder and Scully dynamic, which is another good example, where they just have very different outlooks. And it's that chalk and cheese outlook thing that somehow makes that partnership work very well. I always enjoyed those two together on screen. Yeah, like Joshua Jackson, but yes, yes, indeed.
Joshua Jackson, who appears on the on Kay's cover, leaving cover of Heat magazine.
Oh, yeah.
I bet he does.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Anyway, moving on.
I'm surprised you haven't come up with any succession ones, Bordy. I thought I guessed you were either going to say Tom and Greg or Jerry and Roman.
Oh, yeah, they're both good.
Jerry and Roman, I think, is Tom brilliant.
Tom and Greg's got to be right. Because that's really like the power dynamic of it as well. Oh, actually, no, with Roman as well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Jerry and Roman's much more odd. That's the definition of odd, that coupling, you know.
Because
I mean,
it's mummy issues.
Yeah, I think the doofuses, the two doofuses, you know, I don't think they're that odd. I think they probably would be fast friends. You know, something about the two of them that, yeah. But absolutely brilliant the first answer. Absolutely, Jerry and Roman is a great answer. Yeah. Now I've come up with, remember Rain Dogs? Cash Carraway's Rain Dogs. Daisy May Cooper and Jack Farthing, their characters. Mm. They are proper weird.
Yes.
Kind of psychodrama of a friendship.
Yeah. And you're like, how are these people friends? Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's insane. And that is a brilliant basis for that series, I thought, you know. And they're both so good in their roles, and they're so. Like, they should just be not how, you know, he's this kind of uber privileged, fucking indulgent, posh twat.
She's psychopath.
Psychopath. She's just working class and trying to make her way, you know, trying to find her way through life with her kid and everything. I think that's one of the best odd couple relationships.
Yeah, that's
of
a
recent
really good
years.
Shout.
Yeah. And then my other answer, which is, I don't know, does the question specify a friendship and not, it can't be like a full on sex thing?
Okay. Yeah. Friends can have sex, but I'm going.
Yeah, go with it anyway, Boydie.
I'm going to go with it anyway. This is friends who can have sex. This is the best odd couple of recent TV history, and it is Jodie Foster and Christopher Eccleston in True Detective: Night Country. Chris Eccleston and Jodie Foster.
They're fuck buddies more than friends, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think their characters are an odd couple.
Oh, they are. I think they're brilliantly odd. So totally, absolutely.
Referring to is the actual sex scene. That is
well, that as well. I mean, that as well. Yeah. Everything about it. Yeah. That's my favorite. And Holmes and Watson, of course, in Sherlock.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I like Lady Mary and Tom in Downton. I always thought they were a good pairing because she was such a snob, like the uber snob. And he's this working class chauffeur, but they find this sort of like real close middle ground. They become incredibly close by the end of it. And I thought that
Mary
was really
was a bitch,
lovely.
Let's just say
she was awful. Mary was just so awful.
Was it Edith? Is that her name?
Like, poor Edith. Edith. Yeah, just bullied her relentlessly. I think Tom was a really good influence on Mary. I think he sanded off some of her rough edges, which I thought was nice.
Bit similar to us, James.
That's right, yeah. Ryan and Seth from the OC is another quite like odd couple pairing that I enjoyed. I always thought they were fun.
They worked really well together.
And just because I was listening to it this morning, the episode that I wasn't on where you did Only Murders in the Boarding, I guess you could say Mabel, Oliver and Charles are kind of an odd couple thruple.
Yeah.
An odd thruple. Mm.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's back on form, James.
Is it though? Is it though?
Answer.
I was listening to you guys review it and I was like, yes, Sophie. Yes, Sophie. I am with you 100%. She's like, I'm not watching any more of this. It's boring. Yeah. Sophie was my voice on the podcast while I was away. Okay, that was the listener question. Kay may not be officially on staff anymore, but you can still thrust your questions towards her on the Twitters at Kay Ribeiro. Or to us at Pilot TV, Pilot TV Pod, in fact, I got the URL wrong, at Pilot TV Pod, which even though she's left, we still somehow give her access to, even though it's clearly a security risk.
You're so ridiculous. Right, just once and for all, do you want me to not do it anymore, James? Do you want to do it, James?
Don't poke
or do you not?
The beast. Do not poke the beast.
Because remember, it was for January only and we're now in September.
No, it was for the whole of this year.
No, it wasn't. I said I'd do it for January.
I choose not to remember that.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, well, I know why
you don't remember it, Boydo, but he does.
In perpetuity was what I heard. Right, okay, let's move on to this week's news. And the question that I want to ask as we kick off news is, have either or both of you been in any way keeping up with the George R.R. Martin House of the Dragon furore?
Yes, I have, yes.
Yeah,
tell me.
George R.R. Martin, when not finishing his Game of Thrones books. when not completing A Song of Ice and Fire, posts on his Not a Blog, which is a blog, and he laid into House of the Dragon and all of the reasons why he is unhappy with it, bearing in mind that he's like a co-producer on the show.
Yes.
He then deleted that post, but obviously the internet had already seen it and reposted it everywhere. And there are a number of things where obviously House of the Dragon is based on his book Fire and Blood, which is about the Targaryen dynasty. It's more of a, it's not so much a novel as it is like a fantasy history book, but all the plot is laid out in there. Now, Ryan Condal has made some changes, not massive changes, but as he pointed out in his post, they're the kind of things whereby, you know, a small pebbles can make large ripples. And so it's very specifically the blood and cheese episode where, you know, where there's the, shall we say, there's a decapitation, let's just leave it at that, from season two. And that's substantially different from the book in the way that one character acts and in how many children another character has. And there are reasons, Ryan Condal's talked about this, there are reasons for this, because the timeline is compressed, therefore having three kids seemed unrealistic, they've only got two. George R. R. Martin is apparently very unhappy with that. And not only that, he's also speculating that because of other slight changes they've made, it's going to cause problems down the line.
Question. If yes. he is a co-producer, why couldn't he thrash this out? Like, this does he
very,
have no say?
This is a very good question. Well, by all accounts, his argument for this was that he did argue for this. So basically, he was arguing for Aegon to have a third child. And this third child was essentially written out, but he said he was told this third child would just be born later in the series. So it would still have a part to play, but they're just going to be born later because the timeline's been compressed. But he says, well, actually, that's not happened. The child has still not been born. He's clearly not going to be born. So that character no longer exists. And apparently this character, while not a major character with a lot to play, it does alter the plot slightly. And he's got real bee in his bonnet about it.
But for me, the most interesting thing about the whole story is how George R. R. Martin has just taken it upon himself to pontificate about this whole thing and to go into such detail about what he doesn't like, his problems with the second season of a show that he is, as you say, exec producer yeah. of. And yeah. it seems to me like, because every other person who gets involved in the creation of a TV or film version of their book always says, like, for me, the ones that make sense and are dealing with things in a mature way always say, you know, I'll leave it to them to write, do their version of it. It's fine. You know, it's absolutely, we know TV's different to books. And but George R. R. Martin's the opposite. It's like every fucking, it must be a nightmare for them to work, deal with it. Mustn't it? I mean, it's just bizarre. Have you read the original books, by the way?
So it's just one book. I have it here on okay. my shelf, Fire and Blood. I've not read it, mainly because it's literally not a novel. It's like it's a history textbook for
your
a fantasy
kind of
world.
Book.
And I'm like, I'm not sure what the appeal is for me there, just to read a history book about something that isn't history. It just doesn't strike yeah. me as a great use of time. So I bought it at the time and then never read it. And then I, now that the series is on, I'm obviously not going to read it. But so I haven't. So I don't care as much as George does. But Ryan Condal has responded. HBO did respond officially to this and they were very diplomatic. And they said, obviously, you know, we love George. We love George's work, you know, through clenched teeth. And they were like, obviously, you know, you have to make difficult decisions. You got to streamline. It's a television format. And they said all the things that you would obviously say because it makes a certain amount of sense. But clearly, all is not well.
I think sometimes, I mean, this is different, but I think sometimes people just need to use the notes app on their phone to get out of bed. You know, do you remember, like, this is different, but Nick, was it, how do you say it? Oh, God.
Pizzolatto. Yeah, True Detective.
True Detective, mm-hmm. when he went on that yeah. fucking rant and you're like, oh, yeah. come on, mate. Just,
wow, that was ill-conceived. Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's different, obviously, to this scenario. But it still comes back to the same thing, which is like sometimes it's best just to, you know.
Yeah, zip it. Yeah. keep it to yourself.
Nick Pizzolatto thing, he was an absolute twat. Yeah, what?
Yes. Yeah. 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 I think George is quite precious about it. And maybe if he feels burned because, you know, Game of Thrones obviously went its own way. It had to because he still hasn't finished the books. But I think because it made little changes, and little changes in a story like that can become big changes over time because out of necessity. So
also, I think it is probably quite irksome if you've been promised something that doesn't then come to fruition.
Yeah, maybe. But again, it's one of these things where, George, mate, this is a phone call, not a blog. Yeah, you know, yeah. Call Ryan up and have a conversation. Do not put it on your blog.
Yeah. Well, it gives just us saying. Something to talk about.
Yeah,
so thanks, George.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you are going to call Ryan, maybe just, you know, dial us in. Make
conference
it a conference call. So we can hear as well. Oh, all right. What have we got that isn't dragon related?
I've got some good news for you, James. So Only Murders in the Building has been renewed for the fifth season, which is good news for Boyd and I. Mm-hmm.
another episode by episode spoiler special on the way.
So Boyd, I don't know if you saw this this article in Variety, made me laugh, because James, when you were away on Plus, we discussed the fact that, I'm not going to go into it, but Boyd got invited to the premiere of The Perfect Couple.
Right.
I was not invited by Netflix, despite doing the interview with Eve Hewson. But anyway, skipping past that, he said how it was held at the IMAX and was describing the entrance being, you know, up piss alley, for want of a better term.
Yes, been to those many times.
Yes. Well, did you see on Variety, there was a whole article about the fact that The Perfect Couple launch in Hollywood, they got infested by flying insects and gnats. They all got bitten. Where was it? The Egyptian Theatre, Hollywood. And yeah, apparently Liev Schreiber was like, I think one just bit me, smacking the back of his neck. So they had a harder time in LA,
than
at Waterloo.
How did I miss the story? That is a brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's called The Perfect Couple. Subhead was like, The Perfect Couple could be renamed Attack of the Gnats.
Brilliant.
That's not the best headline I've ever heard.
No.
But
it's not up to Variety's standard.
It was a Subhead. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. That's fun. Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't miss up that one. Kay, I know you're a big fan of Interview with the Vampire and all things supernatural. So that Immortal Universe's next show, The Talamasca, has cast its lead star, and it is Nicholas Denton, someone I've never heard of. Ooh. But, you know, there you go. So Nicholas Denton is going to be the main character.
Name Denton. Rings a bell, yeah. Name rings
no
a bell.
Idea who that is. Tell me who is it, Boydie?
Oh, I'm going to have to look it up now, aren't I? Hold on.
Well, I mean, I could have IMDb'd him.
Yeah, you didn't.
But I didn't. It's true.
But I have heard of him, though.
But I am excited about the show, obviously, because I now mourn Interview with the Vampire now. I need it. But I'm even tempted to go back and watch The Mayfair Witches just to get a hit of that universe
at this
point.
No.
I need it back in my life, so I want the Talamasca.
He's Australian, Nicholas Denton.
As indeed is Sam Reed.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So maybe they've got a big Aussie.
Big fan of Sam Reed.
A huge fan of Sam Reed, yeah.
Well, you're also a fan of the Duffer Brothers. You must have been psyched about the Burroughs casting.
Yes, I didn't really know about, for some reason, this whole Duffer Brothers next project thing passed me by, I think. So they've got this series called The Burrows, to which you're referring, which has got, they've just announced this week, excellent cast, Alfred Molina, Gina Davis, Alfred Woodard, Dennis O'Hare, Clark Peters, Bill Pullman. And it is an amazing lineup. And it is a supernatural mystery series. And eight
set parts. In a retirement community, isn't
set it? Set in a retirement community, exactly. That is a very interesting project, I think.
So we've got some Netflix news. Writer Julie Geary has a six-part psychological thriller coming out called Out of the Dust. It's set in a conservative Christian sect, what's not to love, and apparently it follows the story of Rosie, a dutiful wife and mother who is propelled into a dangerous journey of female emancipation and sexual awakening following a fateful encounter with an escaped convict, Sam. They've announced the cast, and it's a good one. We've got Asa Butterfield, Molly Windsor, Siobhan Finneran, who we love, Christopher Eccleston. Yeah, it looks really good.
The aforementioned Christopher Eccleston.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, yeah. Kay, you don't strike me as a Twilight fangirl.
No.
I mean, I could be wrong. You might be. But are you familiar with Stephanie Meyer, the author behind Twilight? And obviously, she did the Twilight books, but what she did after them. So she went back, she did a couple of books. She did Midnight Sun, which was the first book, Twilight, but from Edward's perspective instead of Bella's perspective. And she also did another one where I think Edward's the human and Bella's the vampire. She keeps going back to this world. But anyway, Midnight Sun, that one that I mentioned first, is getting a series on Netflix, an animated adaptation on Netflix. It's been ordered straight to series. So we're going to get to see Twilight again, but from Edward's point of view, in animation on Netflix.
Those are all your favourite things at once.
I mean, there are vampires. I'll certainly take that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll be tuning in, but that is exciting for fans.
Not sure I'll be
fair
tuning
enough.
In.
Fair
Thanks
enough.
For confirming. Great. You will not be
it's
tuning in.
It's a no
in.
From me, but no. Yes, from loads of other people.
Also very much in the James list of stuff that he likes.
I know what you're going to say.
Yes.
You're going to say grotesquerie, aren't you?
Oh, no. Okay. I'm being serious. No, I'm not being ironical.
I see.
The announcement that there's going to be a Reacher spin-off series.
Yes, that's Ooh. Right. I'm not going to call it Neely because it's pronounced Neegley. There's a G. It's not silent. It bothers me that they call it Neely in the series. But yes, the character of Neegley, who is kind of Reacher's ex-military sort of like officer that she worked under him, so one of his subordinates, kind of an investigator in her own right. She's getting her own spin-off series. It's Maria Sten plays that character.
Neely.
Of Neegley, yes, of Francis Neegley. But
it's I mean,
she's a great character. I mean, maybe Reacher will cameo in it, who knows? But she was in the Army's 110th Special Investigation Unit along with Reacher.
It's a very Prime Video thing to do, isn't it? I think to do
it
this.
Is a very Prime Video thing to do.
This is how they
yes.
work. They're kind of like a big action thriller franchise thing that they can spin off and, like, well, you know,
I'm not anti it.
It's all the various Bosch shows currently in development.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're all for it. Bosch. You know, they didn't do it with The Expanse. Fuckers, but they're clearly doing it with all of these.
Fuckers.
All the good stuff.
Oh, James just scored the entire Prime Video machine. Fuckers.
Hey, they cancelled The Expanse. I stand by that.
Okay.
Listen,
okay.
He's still in his COVID fever zone. So
I am. It's true. Yeah. I did mention Grotesquerie. We should probably mention this. This is the new Ryan Murphy, which stars none other than Mr. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce. Boydie, have you seen the trailer for it?
Yes.
What did you think?
It looks very Ryan Murphy.
It does, yes.
Peak Ryan Murphy.
Peak Ryan Murphy.
Yeah. No, it's got like three different mad shows all starting within, as I make out, of the same months on American TV, yes.
Yes.
Listen,
yes,
I know this is off-brand, but just a one-line answer, Jane. I just want to know.
Right.
Now, is it a fake romance? Yes or no?
Oh, what, in real life?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
Taylor and Travis.
I would have said no.
But
what is
no,
theory?
I would have said no. That's my answer.
Oh, okay. Right.
I didn't know there was a thing here.
I saw there was a thing. Yeah, some people are claiming that it's a fake relationship. But what's the why? What would be the point of that? I don't get why.
Okay. We won't discuss it because this is not the podcast we're discussing.
It seems unlikely. So weirdly, I've seen some of his the clips that he does, because he does a podcast with his brother, and he's talked a lot about their courtship and stuff on his podcast. So you know, if it is fake, then he's a good actor. That's what I'm going to say. One thing I did see, which was very, very exciting, which was the trailer for Arcane Season 2. Now, it is unusual for me to get excited about an animation, but this is exciting, and it is animated because it is the most stunning animation I've ever seen. And it looks absolutely devastating. Two sisters pitted against each other. I mean, I'm totally psyched for Arcane Season 2. Boy, did you ever watch the rest of Season 1 of Arcane?
No. But it was
okay.
But the episode I watched was really good, yeah. I should have persevered. Yeah.
It's fabulous. I'm going to try and bring this back. I'm struggling. I'm going to try and bring this back to something Kay will care about. I'm going to say, right, Kay, did you used to watch One Tree Hill? I feel like you probably did.
Not for the first time. You are wrong.
Really?
Yeah,
you were not a One Tree Hill
fan? No.
Wow.
I probably should have been, but no, I was probably watching Dawson's Creek or something like that, you know.
Well, they're doing a kind of sequel series whereas the teenage characters now returning as the parent characters in that kind of classic way, and then it's going to be a new generation of One Tree Hill kids.
Ah,
One Tree Hill was the kind of teen drama that was on a level lower than Dawson's Creek and The OC, wasn't it?
Like, a little bit, yeah. So it followed it in the footsteps, I think, of The OC.
I was going for the premium stuff.
Yeah.
It was very basketball oriented, but it was so, so stupid and so, so cheesy. And there's a famous scene, and you should probably Google it, you'll find it, where Dan Wolf, who's like the villain character of this, is having a heart transplant.
Uh-huh.
And he's in a wheelchair in the hospital, and the doctor comes in with the heart and trips.
What?
And the heart flies through the air
good. And
lands on the floor. And then the pièce de résistance is not just the heart on the floor, a dog runs in and eats it.
What?
Is
he Manuel from Fawlty Towers?
That's a Naked Gun sequence. That's not.
This is genuinely a thing that happens in One Tree Hill, and it is the greatest thing ever.
No, and I love that you thought I watched this show.
I did.
Yeah. No, unfortunately not, but that sounds exciting that it's coming back.
Literally, if you just Google One Tree Hill Heart Dog. In fact, the Ringer have actually done an oral history of that scene, which is incredible.
Wow. I really want to see it now. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's genuinely amazing. It was not a good show. Although I will say Sophia Bush, who was in One Tree Hill, follows me on Twitter. Never really understood why, but hooray. Hmm.
Hello. Brag. Humble brag.
Yeah. Well, not even humble.
Yes, it's just a brag.
Yes.
Just a brag.
Any other news before we close the lid on this?
No. I think it's a, I think the DNR situation. Yeah.
Kate checked out some time ago, so we're going to move on now.
This is the day after my leaving, dude. I'm very tired.
A very hungover Kay.
She's not even that hungover. She had like one drink. I'm the one who's hungover.
I didn't say I was hungover. I said I was deeply fatigued.
Fatigued, yes. That's how I feel after every of these podcasts. Oh God, reviews then. First up this week, we've got Night Sleeper on BBC One, and this is a 6-part real-time hijack drama that's a bit more train, it's like a train-oriented take on Apple's Hijack, only with about 2% of the budget. This is the overnight train from Glasgow to Euston, hijacked by hackers and a cyber task force scrambled to get the bottom of it all. Kay, what did you think of this thriller, which really should have been called Training Day?
What did I think about this? I think it gets off to a really exciting octane, like high octane start, because basically Joe Cole is an off-duty police officer who is on the platform. Now, does it start in Glasgow? So they're on the platform in Glasgow. Two people are in cahoots and they steal the bag of a woman who's got a kid on the platform. And there's a massive chase. And Joe Cole gives chase. He plays a character called Joe as well. It's like this tense 10 minutes of him chasing this perpetrator, trying to get the bag back, running through the static train. It's all going on. And then obviously, like, there's the title sequence comes up and whatever. And you realize that actually this can't be it, because it's called Night Sleeper. They're going to have to go on this train. It's going to move, and there's something bigger at play. And so it is really tense, and it's kind of exciting. But I think overall, it's got great cast, et cetera, et cetera. It's very entertaining. But overall, I wasn't enamored with it, because I feel like tonally, like, it was all over the place in terms of it's this really tense thriller, and you're, you know, like, because what happens, this isn't a spoiler, but basically a device is found on the train that looks like a bomb, but actually, as James alluded to, it's the fact that there's a massive, like, hack attack, and this train is potentially not going to be able to stop at the next station. And so it's a race against the clock for this off-duty police officer played by Joe Cole to liaise with Alexandra Roach's character, Abby, who is an acting technical director at the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre. And it's about whether they can, like, stop this in time for there not to be a total disaster. So obviously it's like this thrilling drama, but I don't know, maybe you guys disagree. There's these scenes between Joe and Abby. And I just think, I don't know, it just seems really fucking off kilter to me for them to be almost, it's like this flirty banter where Joe Cole remains unfeasibly calm. Like, I know he's a detective, right? But literally he doesn't know what this device is, really. You know, it could be a bomb, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't bat an eyelid. There's no sense of urgency. And instead, him and the character of Abby start singing along to Lily Allen. And I'm just
I believe you'll find it's Kate Nash, but I can understand why you got it wrong.
Okay, fine.
Yes.
All right, cool. Okay, fine. Well, either or, you know.
It sounds like Lily Allen.
In this instance, sort of interchangeable, because the fact of the matter is, if you think you're going to be careering to your death on a train, you know, like, you presumably would be taking the situation a little bit more seriously. So, it took me out of the drama. I found that quite jarring. I can see it's entertaining and what have you, but overall, I think I prefer Hijack.
Yeah, it does feel like Hijack on a train, particularly because it's real time as well. It plays out in real time like Hijack. So this is a roughly a 6-hour journey from Glasgow to London on this train, and the six-episode series will... it will play out in real time, as well as being confined to half the action being confined to the train as well, a la Hijack being in a way it was confined to the plane. But to be fair to the creators of this show, they were creating it before Hijack arrived on air. So it's in no way is it a ripoff or anything. They just wanted to do a drama set on a train, not a train set, drama about a train set.
Hornby, the movie.
Yeah. And set it in real time and do a kind of like a breathlessly entertaining, exciting. And I think they've pulled it off, I have to say. I didn't bother me about the Joe Cole. He's trying to be charming. He's trying to be charming and deal with stuff, isn't he? Yeah, that's his character. He's trying to calm things down and not, you know, and be kind of like within this emergency situation. You know,
Do you know what? It just wasn't believable to me. Like, I'm sure that was the intention, but I just think, like, in that situation, yeah, you want to be chilled, sure, Do you start singing along to a song? Like when there's a potentially bomb about to go off? It's mad.
I literally wrote down when I was watching, what the actual fuck?
Like,
they're sick. God, your friend is much fitter. And I was like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, what is happening? This is a terrorist incident. You're fucking singing along to Kate Nash.
I'm all for having a laugh and a sing along, but, I mean, you know the time and place.
It's a really, but I totally get what Kay's saying tonally. Like, it's really strange because on the one hand, it's like my ideal show. Like, it's real time, it's hijack, it's all this stuff. And you're running through the train, there's good stuff in there, but there are moments where the dialogue is woeful, like painfully bad, and some of the plot things, it's just like strain credulity. And these shows, look obviously they strain credulity by definition, but I always think that you need to walk that line where it's going to be heightened, it's going to be melodramatic, but it's got to be at least within the sort of vague sphere of believability. Like don't go too, otherwise you're in science fiction territory, and that's fine, but like if you are going to do that, just do it. And there are moments in this where just some of the stuff that happens, this is just not how technology or anything works. Like, what are you doing? And, you know, I don't want to get into spoilers. So I'm kind of having to skirt around it a little bit because I don't want to talk about this. But suffice it to say, the nature of the attack and how it's done, I found to be quite silly at times. And I think the silly word is big here for me, because like this occasionally just was very, very silly. And there's a bit where a mother's missing her little boy, and, you know, with the best will in the world, that mother is surprisingly fucking chill, given that her child has been missing for like an hour or something on this train. Everyone's evacuated. Has anyone seen my child? And you're like, oh my God, how are you not setting the train on fire?
No, he hasn't been missing for an hour.
It is real time. It's more like 20
minutes. It's real
time.
She's stressed out and she needs to get someone to help her. She's stressed like I've lost my iPhone.
She's not stressed like I've lost my child.
I mean, to be fair, lots of people would be more stressed about losing the iPhone.
So there were moments like that. I'm like, okay, that doesn't work. And there's a couple of like quote unquote comedy passengers who are just slightly being difficult. And then, you know, there are good people in there as well. But look, all of this said, like, I do think the show was silly. I do think, you know, at times I felt the budget sort of squealing. And I don't think tonally it always worked. But all of that said, all of those misgivings there, I'm totally going to watch all of this because I did have kind of a bit of a whale of a time watching it, despite all the silliness.
Yeah, it's brilliantly entertaining.
I had a lot of fun with it. I did have a lot of fun.
I think your budget, you always have this with the budget. I think it looked great. I thought they did a really good job.
I'm being unfair because I'm comparing it to Apple, who have infinite money.
Yeah, so, exactly. But I think you'd watch, if you weren't thinking about Hijack at all, you'd think this is a very well put together. I think it's a really slick piece of work, actually. I think in terms of technically, all that stuff, the set, the train is a set, you know.
The set is good.
You know, the way they seamlessly kind of stitch together the cybersecurity center is I think it feels like a big budget thing. I don't think it's low budget at all.
But weirdly, it's like, it's not even so much in the sets. It's just that there are moments where, so at one point the train does a thing and it takes a long time for the train to do this thing. And while the train is doing this thing, everyone just looks around completely clueless. Like, what's happening?
I think they're building tension.
They all look so baffled. And I'm like, all the tension from that scene is just absolutely leached out of it by slightly just sort of languid editing. And I get that it's real time. I do get that. But even so, there is also a bit where someone presses a button, an emergency stop button, and it doesn't work. And so in what is like supposed to be some pseudo Jack Bauer sequence, that character then runs the entire length of the train, pressing every single emergency button just to make sure that one of them doesn't work. And it's like,
I know what you're doing here. This is the kind of thing that I would do.
I was like, I know what you're doing here, but there is no tension in this whatsoever. And it just looks daft.
I did enjoy the annoying lifestyle blogger character because it reminded me of the, do you remember the sister in Hijack? Was it in Hijack? Yes, that was funny.
And like, obviously there are some unexpected people on the train, which I guess is going to come out in later episodes. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely enough here to make me, I'm 100%. And when I finished this episode, I was very close to just teeing up the next one. This is a riot. Like, it's but it's a riot.
I've watched four of the six and I can tell you that it carries on being incredibly riveting.
I genuinely can't wait to watch it.
It's really enjoyable, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm 100% recommending people watch it, but just, you know,
and
just know what
and by the way, Alexandra Roach is really good in it as well. She does have an off-kilter kind of delivery and tone, you know, and she's great. She's very interesting. Yeah,
Yeah.
No, people should definitely watch.
James Cosmo's in it. Ruth Madeley's in it. You know, it's
great. Yeah. And they deal with the fact that a disabled passenger has to deal with the way they're treated by public transport. It's a disgrace, which they incorporate horrific. Into that. Quite, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she's like, really get is. Off the train. She's like, there's no fucking ramp. Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
Yeah. It is fun. I quite like, and I can't remember, I don't know who the actor is who plays the kind of the guard who just loses his absolute shit
at this really point funny, in this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it did make me giggle. And there are some sort of rug pulls, which are quite fun as well when those are done. But Night Sleeper then, super silly, but definitely worth the watch, I think. And when does it land? It's BBC One, isn't it, Boydie? Is it
Sunday.
All in one go?
It does arrive all in one go on Sunday, the 15th of September 2024. But it's also airing live every week for 3 weeks on Sundays and Mondays from that very date.
Perhaps you could download them all and watch them on a train from Glasgow to Euston. Ah,
dream scenario.
As it was meant to be seen.
That's where the screening should happen if they had to
They should have had the premiere, done the whole thing just on the Night Sleeper. Yeah, let's see that happen. Right, onwards. And next up, we have The Teacher 2, which is the second installment in Channel 5's anthology about educators gone awry. Last year, it was a teacher shagging a pupil. This year, it's teachers shagging each other with rather, shall we say, dark consequences. Boydie, what did this show teach you?
Now, wait a minute, Boydie, before you begin, I've just got to make everyone aware there are spoilers, that we were sent a list of spoilers. Okay.
Oh, we were sent a list of what spoilers we're not allowed to divulge.
Yes.
I was about to say, what were they? But that would be...
Yeah. Please
read out the list for us, Kay. Okay, so, right, Kay, you're going to be like the spoiler klaxon monitor.
He'll be good. I just wanted to flag that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to spoil it. What I am going to spoil is that Kay's communication about this program on...
You've got to stop outing me. This is not fair. It's really private.
Well, I won't go into detail.
Go into detail. I now want to know what you're going to say.
She messaged me, I think 2 nights ago. Boyd, have you seen The Teacher? Yes. Okay. And then she says, this isn't a spoiler because I won't be... Blah, blah, blah. So I won't say what she said, but it was... The rules, as we know, of this podcast are we do not discuss... Okay. The
Listen.
First rule of the podcast is do not discuss the shows in advance to make it clear what you think of them. And I'm afraid Kay made it quite clear what she thinks of it.
Okay, I did, because I couldn't contain it. And I'm not going to... I just basically... I said something to Boyd, and then I said, listen, the reason why it's not a spoiler is because I'm not going to go into this level of detail on the pod. But my point was, I just said, I think this might be the thing that pushes James over the edge. He's got COVID.
I don't think it will push him over the edge at all. And we'll get to that. We'll get to how far James has been pushed over the edge. But anyway.
Right, well, I'm just saying, we know how he feels about Channel 5 anyway. So I was just like, he's got COVID as well. So.
Right. Here is The Teacher 2. The first series called The Teacher, which I think we reviewed on a show, or maybe I was the one who
watched it. No recollection, but we might well have done.
Fine, okay. That was in 2022, and Sheridan Smith was starred in it as a school teacher who was accused of having a relationship with a 15-year-old pupil. And so it was a kind of...
Actually,
like,
do you know what? I think I do remember this.
Yes, I
filed it under other predicament. Sheridan Smith has got herself into on Channel 5.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and she gets the predicaments on ITV as well, and soon to be on BBC as well, I think. Anyway, the director, the thing that series has in common with this is the title, and thematically, it's clearly about bad stuff that teachers are getting into, right? And this is definitely bad stuff that the teacher gets into. And it's got the same director, Dominic Leclerc, who also worked on sex education, among other stuff. This time, the lead character is Danny, played by Cora Toynton. She's married to Emmett J. Scanlon off The Tower. The brilliant Emmett.
He's back again.
He's such good value. Always Emmett J. Scanlon, I have to say. And she's clearly got this thing, this flirtation with her colleague, Jimmy, played by Will Meller, who most recently, of course, was in Mr. Bates versus the Post Office and was rather excellent in that. But he goes back years to 2 pints of lager, etc. And basically... the main premise is that Cara Toynton's character, they and Will Meller, they take a group of kids off to on a school trip, and while Will Meller and Cara Toynton are having it off in a nearby kind of shed type area,
a boathouse,
that one of the kids disappears. That's all I'll say, as per Kay's reference to the spoilers that we're not. But I think that is the basic premise, right? And I have to say, good on Will Meller for getting his arse out in full in the what should only be described as a vivid sex scene.
I was surprised by how long the camera dwelt on his undulating buttocks.
There's also a funny bit in the sex scene where. What?
A rubbing of the stomach.
Yes. The rubbing of the stomach.
It's so funny. Like, this really stood out to me as something that I wouldn't think to do.
No, it was unusual. I applaud it. It was clearly like the coordinator, what they called the intimacy coordinator.
Yeah.
How about, right, that you, Cara Toynton, you just grab hold of his, like, stomach. He's quite tall, impressively tall, Will Meller. You know, Will Meller's now what, in his 40s, I'm right, at least. And she's like, you just kind of like, I don't know, smooth down his stomach or whatever, you know. But it is a weird moment that she kind of, you know. But it feels like at least that scene, just to be specific about the scene, because it does go on, right? It seems to be like a sex scene, definitely from all the woman's point of view, from Cara Toynton's character's point of view. And it's, you know, and we're now in a place where, you know, you don't. He's the one who is the object of lust, if you like, which is quite interesting. And you know, he's the one who is more naked than she is in the scene. Put it that way.
Yes, true. That is true.
Yeah,
sun's out, buns out.
Exactly. So do you know what? This is another example of something where I obviously. This is the reason why I ban us talking about things in advance, because I think it does. It makes I now feel like, oh, should I feel ashamed of the fact that I enjoyed this show? You know, is it like, you know, it's like bringing the shame down. And I enjoyed it. I actually genuinely think it's quite good, because I think I'm
very much enjoying Kay's expressions as you say this.
Kay is literally doing facial expressions like, you insane son of lunatic. No. But I tell you why though, specifically. I think it's weirdly, for a Channel 5 psychological thriller, which it is, it's weirdly, like, almost understated. And I know, like, things happen in it, and people have conversations about stuff. Like, there's a big conversation that happens between Will Meller and Cara Toynton after their shag. And I found it quite realistic. Like, people don't react to stuff in a particularly melodramatic way so far in what I've seen of this series, as you might expect them to in another version of this show. I thought it was perfectly fine. And I know I probably would be more enthusiastic about it, but not for the fact that Kay clearly thinks it's one of the worst things she's ever seen.
All right, okay. I apologise for messaging you about it.
Yeah, you did break the spoiler code. I definitely don't approve of that.
I genuinely couldn't help myself. Because,
wow.
Listen, I'm saying from the start that I am not anti Channel 5, and I've liked a lot of their dramas, but this is not one that I have enjoyed, because I think Cara Toynton, Emmett J. Scanlon, Will Meller, all really good actors, but I just don't think this is the best showcase of their work, because the script isn't the strongest. And I found the stilted dialogue, which I think then had a knock-on effect on the performances. And there's just no subtlety to it. So, like, for example, there's one scene where a boy, one of the boys, Zach, I think it is, has something in his bag that he shouldn't, which we know because we get a lingering shot of him looking at it, then he goes back in the bag, you know, like, and I don't know, I just, even the fact that, look, in terms of the act of passion, the boat-based shag, like, there's a couple of instances where they clearly, you know, can't resist each other. One happens and they're worried that someone's seen them. So that's already happened at nighttime. And then I know this is just like a, you know, it's me probably just being a bit, you know, foofy or whatever. But I just think if at nighttime you couldn't control yourselves but then you got scared, I just personally don't believe during the daylight when you've got a crowd of kids with you, you would then think, oh, you know, about 10 metres from him. Do you know what? Yeah, we were scared last night when it was pitch black. But yeah, let's go and have a cheeky shag in the boathouse. It's going to be totally fine. We'll just leave these kids. It just didn't seem plausible to me. So,
I mean, they don't, but it's an off-the-cuff moment, isn't it? That's the whole point. It's completely like they haven't thought it through. No, they've just literally...
Who among us has not had the kayaking horn at one point or another?
It's not like they've scheduled it. You know, now we take Now we take 10 minutes out of our busy schedule to go and have sex in the
No, I do understand that. But it's too, like, I don't know. I just didn't see them so sort of gripped in a moment of passion that they just couldn't contain themselves. They had to, you know, goes. But overall, I would say, if I had to sum it up, and like I said, not anti-Channel 5, love their dramas. I just think this had a touch of a Spanish telenovela element for me.
Oh, I mean,
which ordinary I love, but in this instance, not so much.
This did not. You'll be disappointed to hear Kay push me over the edge.
Yay!
But it is raging bobbins from top to bottom.
Like, raging bobbins.
Raging bobbins.
I mean, it really is. Because also, like, the kids themselves are like, I mean, the kids are so inorganic. Like, they're utterly unbelievable as human adolescents. The conversations between them, the way they act, like, well, I was just like, I don't believe you're actual human children.
Yeah, but also, James, don't you think the character of Matt, who's a young boy, seemed way older than he was? He seemed
he's clearly in his 40s or something, but he's also a raging cock, but that's by
design. Yeah, he's not actually in his 40s, but he just had the demeanour of someone who's much older than,
The whole thing, that was very odd, and I found it just very, very clunky. The stomach rubbing thing, I just assume he had wind or something. I just wasn't really clear. That was just weird. And then just all of it through, it just felt so sort of poorly constructed and unbelievable. And it's just, again, it's awful to say it, but this show is everything I think Channel 5 is.
And this is what I meant when I said I knew that you'd have this reaction. I thought, God, it's so annoying when, like, we watch an ITV drama, for example, that's less than perfect, because you just know that it's going to give him, like,
it underscores my prejudice.
Yeah,
it is,
but you're
true.
Just encouraging him by doing it.
Yeah, but this is true, because I believe it to be true in this instance. Wow.
I did not have the most fun watching this last, especially because I came straight off Night Sleeper, which for all its flaws I had a great old time with, and then I really, really kind of had to struggle through this one. I got to the end, I was like, whew, good, I'm glad that's done. And again, there's the way, I can't go into how this kind of resolves this first episode, but the scene during which this episode resolves, I thought, was again very poorly staged. I thought, again, I think the thing with this is there is absolutely zero subtlety at any point in this. It is very, very, what you see is what you get. We're going to ram it home. If the kid has an item of contraband, shall we say, we're not going to show it to you once, we're not going to show it to you twice, we're going to show it to you three times, then he's going to drop it, then he's going to pick it up really inconspicuous, and he's going to hide it behind his back. It's like, we get it, we've seen it, move on. It's
like they
fine.
Do in a Spanish telenovela.
Right, yeah. So I feel like it's just a bit heavy-handed, I think is maybe my thing. But look, if you enjoyed watching Sheridan Smith and her sexual shenanigans in the first series, maybe you will enjoy this one. It does involve about her shag, and that might be a recommendation. So, Boydy, when does this come to Channel 5?
Monday, the 9th of September, 2024. That is today.
Is it literally stripped across the week?
It is literally Monday to Thursday, exactly, stripped across the week. Yes. In classic Channel 5 style.
Yes, in classic Channel 5 style-y. Finally this week, oh God, we are being dragged, kicking and screaming, back to the world of haute couture for yet another fashion drama, this time about the House of Ledu, which I believe is entirely fictional in this regard, which I guess is a good thing. Kay, did this French, since you are our foreign language editor, did this French show fit like a glove, or was it decidedly off the rack?
It did fit like a glove. You'll be surprised to hear. So this is, first of all, about a fashion designer called Vincent, played by Lambert Wilson, who...
Great name.
Is embroiled in scandal and threatens to bring down his fashion house. And it's all about how his rivals are kind of conspiring to buy the fashion house from him, capitalize on his infamy and the controversy surrounding him. And it's about a warring family, essentially, because within his family, some have defected to the rival brand. And also there's this subplot about, like, these renegade fashion students who are then trying to make a name for themselves and make a point about fast fashion, or just, like, know the fact that luxe fashion and how they make their products and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I was less interested in that subplot. But do you know what? I really enjoyed this much more than any of the other fashion shows we've seen on Apple or whichever other channels we've seen them on, because this one, unlike the others, which are really buttoned up and quite staid and take themselves very seriously, this is unapologetically just fun and entertaining. It's a bit soapy, and also taps into a lot of things that I love. Warring families, like family dynamics that are like messed up. So like with Succession, or most recently with The Perfect Couple, but also exactly with The Perfect Couple, that high-end luxury world, right? So where I love those kind of shows that I've got my nose pressed up against the screen because I'm just obsessed with that, you know, the other world and the money behind it. So we kind of explore the fashion world in that sense. And that also brings a lot of, like, I think the humor. We see one intern, for example, who he might lose his internship because the bubbles in the water have disappeared. And there's, I don't know if you remember this other lackey who was he wearing polyester, which threatened to give one of the senior management a migraine, and he was potentially going to be fired as well. So overall, I enjoyed this. I found it very watchable, and in a way that the other ones that I found a real slog to get through, because it's making a point about the fashion world, but it's not up its own arse and taking itself too seriously. What do you think?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it's very much, the thing is, we have had, as I've said about the previous dramas, that most of which have been based on real people in the fashion industry, of which there have been quite a few, that invariably the main character is a pain in the ass, spoiled, egomaniac, creative genius, who insists on having his own way, you know, with everyone. And I mean, it's almost like but there's some truth to that. So, you know, there's plenty of cases within the fashion industry of, and they make, in fact, they refer to them in the show. There's a reference to Galliano, John Galliano, who had his own racism scandal. And this is clearly takes some inspiration from Dolce & Gabbana had a whole scandal. I think it was Gabbana rather than Dolce that said something stupid, you know, somewhere on social media. And the world of fashion, you know, I have vague experience of, you know, fashion shows, and I'm vaguely aware of the details of the fashion world because of one of my best friends is quite heavily embroiled in it, and they are, and the fashion industry is, you will not be surprised to know, to hear, is full of absolute bellends. And this show is full of absolute bellends. It's like, can you know, and it is quite entertaining. I wanted it to go further. That's my issue. This is my issue with this show. I think, like, you've got the funny bits with the bubbles, as you mentioned. There's a funny bit where the really spoiled Diane Rovell, who is the queen CEO of the rival fashion house, she's driven across Paris to her destination, and they have to drive her in have to avoid all the ads for the rival fashion house, only so that they accidentally bump into one, and she's furious. And
I respect her. She's my new idol.
She's entertaining. I wanted a bit more of that. I think, and maybe, you know, I only watched the first episode, and there's a little bit of illicit shagging going on as well, and you know, very well made and stuff. I felt it needs to be a little bit more over the top in its kind of celebration of all these absolute ridiculous divas that do indeed populate the fashion industry, to make it. I never thought I'd say this, but I think it needed to be a little bit more Ryan Murphy than it was. It needs to go a bit madder. But, you know, maybe it does go madder as it goes on.
Yeah, it did feel weirdly grounded, didn't it? I was quite surprised by almost how restrained it feels at times.
This is my point, yeah.
And that kind of surprised me, because you think that, you know, the ones that are based on real fashion designers, they are restricted because it's historical. With this, you can kind of go as nuts as you want. And it did feel, but, you know, as you say, maybe they're saving it for down the line. I do wonder if we had not had to sit through, God, who have we sat through? Chanel,
God,
Christian Dior, you know, Balenciaga. If I hadn't sat through at least a dozen different designers, I might have been able to.
The Ewan McGregor one.
If I had not had to do that, I wonder whether I would have been able to watch this without repeatedly banging my head against a wall.
But I think so, because I think we've been so scarred by
this. Done. Yeah, I am so, so done with haute couture. I'm so sick to the back teeth of the whole thing.
It's back to Georgia Asda for James.
Yeah, it really is. It's 100%. I can't deal with it. Like, I've just had too much of it, and I have not enjoyed any of them. And so I went into this just already, I think, predisposed to hate it. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with the show. I can't even. I can't.
Didn't you like the playfulness of it?
And like, so there were moments, like he had his moments. There's a bit where he's obviously dealing with a, shall we say, very particular customer. And she's, I think, Korean, and she's speaking in Korean. And this is, so it's going via a translator. And he's like ranting furiously in French. And then someone's like, no, don't translate that. Don't translate that. And so there's some fun to be had there because she's clearly being a little bit precious and demanding real jewels and more lace. And he's like, I cannot work under these circumstances. It's magnificent. I really enjoyed that scene. But I think that's what I wanted the show to be, but like times 10. Like I wanted that maybe ramped up a bit. But maybe look, that's the show I want. That's not the show they're making. You know, they're not making it for me. So I guess, so it left me a little bit cold. And yes, there's illicit shagging and filming and someone stealing a phone and there's something being caught on camera. But I kind of wasn't drawn in. I wasn't particularly engaged with it. I just felt a little bit bored. And I think, again, it's because it's set in this fashion world. It's the same shit, you know, and we've even had ones with Nazis in it and World War II, and those were still boring. This had neither. And so it didn't grip me. It didn't seem to me.
You know what I thought as well? You know, it's what's become one of those tropes, one of those kind of big cliches of TV drama is the moment when everyone sees the viral video at the same time.
They really
milked it in this episode. They had two scenes where that happened. Yes. And it really like, all right, we get. I mean, in a way, I think sometimes we judge, you know, a French show with subtitles as opposed to, say, I don't know, a Channel 5 or show without subtitles. And there were moments in this that were incredibly clunky and unsubtle, and including the all seeing the same video at the same time. But because it's in French with subtitles and it's more lavish,
it gives it a bit of class.
It feels like it's a class. Exactly.
I think it had more finesse.
Well,
yeah, I'm not sure.
I will say there is a scene in this that is very similar to a scene in the Channel 5 show that we did this week.
Yes.
And is better done in this one.
I agree. Yeah, that's true. Probably. It was entertaining. Be interesting. It's definitely trying to be a succession of the fashion world as well, isn't it? I feel like, but you know, succession is genius.
It may well be trying to do that. I will never find out. I'm sorry, I'm out. Sorry,
ladies. Oh, another show you're not watching any more episodes.
Absolutely not. I am 100% out. The only one this week that I'm going to be watching more of is Night Sleeper. I'm sorry, that's it.
Okay.
Fine. So La Maison, which is Apple TV Plus. Now, we pulled this forward from next week, haven't we, Boydie? Because this week is such an absolute desert as far as TV goes.
It is a desert, yeah. So it's out next Friday.
Next Friday, La Maison. So that debuted on Apple TV Plus on the 20th of September.
That is the date.
Yeah, so you can build up some anticipation for that in advance of it. Now, other things that we missed this week, as we mentioned, Fringe, all five seasons, I think it's five seasons of Fringe, comes to ITVX on Thursday the 12th. If you've never seen it, watch it, not just because, Joshua Jackson's in it, good old Paisley Witter, but because it's great, sort of sci-fi episodic procedural in the X-Files vein. It gets really cool later on where they start dealing with multiple realities and you get different episodes in different dimensions. It's great stuff. Tulsa King returns this week, season 2 of that, which we weren't able to see in time, which is on the Sunday the 15th, I think, Boydie, isn't it, on Paramount Plus?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Emily in Paris, saison 4, part 2, arrives on Thursday the 12th. That's back. If you're an Emily in Paris fan, I'm sure you'll be wanting to watch that. Is there anything else we missed? I don't know that there is.
Not really. There's the National TV Awards, which Kay will be going to on Wednesday.
Yes, one of our number was invited, and it wasn't Boyd.
Yeah. There's a high-end documentary series about fashion as well. Well, it's about Vogue, starting on Disney Plus on Friday.
Vogue is very much fashion.
Yeah, in Vogue, the 90s, correct. Yes. But rather than the fashion world generally, it's specifically a documentary about Vogue in the 90s. There's also a documentary on Monday. This will be interesting, about the impact of Mr. Bates and the Post Office. And it's called Mr. Bates and the Post Office, The Impact. That's on
what
ITV.
What date does that drop?
ITV today, Monday the 9th of September. 9 o'clock.
2024.
Anything else? 2024. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't encourage him.
Waterloo Road, the pre-Watershed drama series. That's back on Tuesday for Waterloo Road fans. Tuesday the 10th, 9 o'clock. It's quite a popular show. Yeah. Anyway, not one for us to review on this show.
James, when you're off, Boyd finally opened up about his deep passion for Mrs. Brown's Boys.
he wouldn't stop talking
about it on Plus. You would not.
I mean, that's
shut
a slight distortion of the reality. But yeah.
Okay, super. Now, what's the plan for Pilot Plus? Are we attempting to do Tulsa King? Is that the plan? Is that the goal?
I don't know. Maybe. I guess so. Yeah. It could be one goal. Yeah. It could be one option.
There you go. That's the kind of definitive scheduling that the people come to Pilot Plus for. So that's good.
Welcome to our planning sessions.
Yes. And we'll be continuing our spoiler specials of Slow Horses, where Kay will actually get to talk about episode 2 of Slow Horses, as opposed to preparing to talk about episode 2 and then realizing only episode 1 had
you
aired.
Heard that. I was hoping you wouldn't hear it.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry. My bad.
But it's all good. It's all good because Slow Horses is fabulous, whether it be episode 1 or 2. So that's marvellous. Right, that is it for this week's show. What is our pick of the week?
Night Sleeper.
Night Sleeper.
It is Night Sleeper. Marvellous. If you enjoyed the show, please do head over to Apple TV Podcasts or COVID. Head over to COVID and give us a 5 Spotify rating. I don't know what I'm doing. See, I'm still slightly ill. Head over to any platform you like. Like, apparently, YouTube is now the biggest platform for podcasts.
What?
So. Yeah, so one of the things I am going to be looking to doing is getting this particular podcast on the tube. We're going to put it on the YouTube. So for those of you who don't know, and that's all of you, because I don't think I've ever mentioned it before, but we have our nice new studios. The studios have cameras that record us when we do the show. So I'm going to chop that footage together, much to Kay's disgust, and I'm going to construct video versions of this podcast, which will go out. So if that's something that appeals to you, then let's hear from you. Let's hear about it.
Just for clarity, I'm not a fan of being filmed. However, I have said I'm more than happy to get out of my comfort zone. And actually, the last few weeks we have been recording, and I don't want to say sabotage is at play, but my camera's never worked, James.
It's true. Your camera has never worked. I suspect if I were to consult the CCTV footage, I would see you disconnecting it of an evening before we go to record.
I have put makeup on for those last 3 recording sessions for a reason.
Haven't we all, Kay?
Yeah, that's true. He always gets a light powder from Boyd before he goes off. It's like...
Yeah, keep the head shine down. It's very important. Yes, so I'm going to be playing around with some editing there. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled and those will be with us at some point soon. On next week's show, there's quite a lot coming to the TV next week. So Agatha All Along will be coming to Disney Plus. Will we get to see that in time? I very much doubt it, but you never know. A Very Royal Scandal obviously comes to Prime Video. Will we see that again? I've no idea.
I am interviewing Ruth Wilson, though, for her, who plays
Emily
Maitlis.
Okay, good. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Boyd has put All Creatures Great and Small on the calendar. I'm unsure why.
Unbelievable.
Ouch.
The Penguin comes to Sky. Yeah. That's exciting. We will have seen that, but I don't know if it's embargoed. Frasier is back for season, I think it's 13 of that.
Boyd's heart sinks.
Season PTSD 2. PTSD face over this.
So. They are calling it season 2 of the reboot.
Are they?
So,
and I think you are as well, because you don't want it to sully the original. And something called The Wives is on Channel 5.
Channel 5. Yeah. More Channel 5 drama.
More Channel 5 goodness. And
I predict now, right, because all these massive shows, it's an incredibly busy week. The Penguin, Agatha All Along, Monsters, you haven't mentioned, the Lila Menendez story,
which
is a Ryan Murphy production as well, God. And the Very Royal Scandal. They'll all be embargoed, and we will end up reviewing the Channel 5 show.
So what you're predicting is it's going to be a Channel 5 fest next week and then an incredibly bumper Pilot Plus.
Yeah. And no one can message me what they think about The Wives in advance.
Okay. You have been chastened. You have been warned.
Yes, fine.
All right, I am going to retire to the other room and have a lie down so that I can convalesce.
Like a Victorian lady.
fully healthy for next week's show, having shaken off the last of the COVID. We've got, by the time this goes out, we will have done the live podcast on the weekend. I don't know if I will have been there because it will very much depend on whether or not I'm still COVID.
Empire, you mean, by the way. There is
Kay thought
there was a secret. I mean, I would put it past him. To plan.
The look on Kay's face when I said that.
I genuinely was crestfallen because I was like, I've got plans. What? But of course, it wouldn't involve me anyway.
It's just me and Boyd doing a live show without you.
Yeah.
Now that we have to pay you, you know, we just can't afford it. Sorry.
Yeah. Top dollar, man.
Right. Okay. That's it. We're done. Oh, good God. COVID out.